Hey, hey, hey. This is Ricky Herbst, cinema program director, throwing down tracks in the state-of-the-art Browning Cinema in the lovely DeBartolo Performing Arts Center on the bucolic campus of the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, St. Joe County, Indiana. I hope you had a wonderful fall break and are ready to tackle the second half of the truth and fiction semester with gusto. Helping ensure this class chugs along with some force is Kevin Krizmanich, who heads up the technology that makes the Browning Cinema steam ahead, as well as handling the sound engineering on these lectures, as well as establishing Shot, the official podcast of the Browning Cinema. As always, big thanks to Kevin, and also to Stacey Sikovich, who handles the online engineering of these lectures. Now, in the second half of the semester, and now outside of the Bill Nichols documentary modes, we're in the wild, wild west, folks. Actually, the hope is that the initial framework given by our modes will inform not only your takes on the films we'll be watching, but guide portions of our discussion as well. As such, we're never really free of it. Rather, the hope is that that framework will stay with you as you engage reality media in all its forms going forward. But for the second half of the semester, these online lectures should be a little bit briefer than the first half of the semester. That's how we con ya. We get you with the big content up front and then thin it out. In actuality, the bulk of our formal framework points have been covered. We'll be teasing out other ideas with individual films throughout the semester, which often are best left to the discussion component rather than lecture. Still, there's plenty to discuss with How to Survive a Plague. At the outset, I would like to bring forward how we think of instructional videos. The nature of many how-to fill-in-the-blanks is that they are instructing we, the audience, as to how we complete a task. Here, let's think about the giant bank of how-to documentaries YouTube has available. How to make a wooden bike. Sure, YouTube has that covered. How to play box cantatas. How to make spicy pesto. How to knit wool pants. Yep. All with hundreds of thousands of views. We have to throw these in a bucket of documentaries as, in their directly didactic way, they are telling us, instructing us on the course of events that we in turn can mimic in order to do X, Y, or Z. These are, let's call them, recipe book documentaries, or recipe documentaries. Give you a step one, a step two, a step three. Rarely do we find feature-length documentaries that have such a sequential order of events. Other than getting somewhat tiring, one assumes, to hear do this and then that and then this next and then that for 90 minutes, it also speaks in some way to how documentaries, looking to instruct, can placate our need to get involved. Many documentaries depict how someone else accomplished a particular task. And in our position as viewers, we don't see how to replicate it. For example, let me tease this out. How to make dolphins safer by way of activism is at the core of the movie The Cove, which won the Oscar for Best Documentary in 2009 and depicts how a group of activists infiltrated a place where dolphins are slaughtered and saved them. There isn't a larger message about how to affect social change. Rather, we learn that someone else has handled it for us using means outside our means. For example, if you didn't have the night vision goggles deployed in the film, how could you ever begin to replicate what they're doing? One way to sidestep that problem is to present guiding principles rather than a particular recipe and, mind you, how closely the idea of a recipe follows narrative structure. First the flour, then the sugar, then the eggs. First we learned dolphins were being slaughtered. Then we learned where it was happening. Then we went about documenting how we would change it. So what might be the guiding principle for a film like The Cove? It could get to how we raise consciousness about animals, how we depict them in films to give them certain characteristics. It could be detailing the motivation required for people to take up a cause like animal rights. All potential pathways that would focus on the guiding principles of action, a how-to guide that could be more roundly applicable, but isn't utilized in the film. Here's another example. Think back to your driver's ed courses and the rickety 16mm films played, or DVDs if you're younger or whatnot. Remember driver's ed films where they gave you the order of events? Or if you are in this situation, then do this. If you find yourself at the corner with three other cars, then here is the order of events. That's a how-to instructional film that would be of the recipe nature. Let's compare that to a classic film, which I'll link to in this email, which is the Smith System of Five Keys of Defensive Driving. In this defensive driving video from mid-century, Smith outlines that a driver should, number one, aim high in steering, meaning look at least 15 seconds in your future. Two, get the big picture, meaning look at the totality of the scene as you drive. Three, keep your eyes moving, meaning just don't stare idly at the road. Four, leave yourself an out, meaning don't get stuck too close to someone without time to react. And five, make sure they see you, meaning use your turn signals and horn and communicate with others. I love the Smith system so much, and you'll see a framed picture of those five keys in my office if you were to visit it. And the reason I love them is because they are teaching you tactics and not a how-to. It's giving applicable and broad guidance. So broad that, in fact, I think aim high, get the big picture, keep your eyes moving, leave yourself an out, and make sure they see you are generally keys to life, the Tao of Smith, more than anything. Drive and live by those principles, and you'll be better off. Now, that seems like a judgment call. Do all documentaries that give commandments of sorts, rather than sequential instructions, get a green light, to continue the driving metaphor? That's where I think it's good to think of how documentaries can be used as a guide for us to model behavior. Films in which we are able to extract how they did do something in a manner that is actionable for the viewers on our end. How to Survive a Plague, I think, comes from that world, positively so. And in it, I think, we can get an idea of how to make an instructional film, a how-to of a how-to. Interestingly, How to Survive a Plague came a year after another film I think is worth noting from this world with a very similar title, How to Die in Oregon. Directed by Notre Dame alumnus Peter Richardson, How to Die in Oregon shows the political process of how to prompt social change, this particular example being at the ballot box with the documentary tracking supporters of the death with dignity argument. Avoiding the recipe film conventions, it shows social change that can be modeled. Not replicated, but modeled. You can look back to the modes here for a second and think of films that try not to create realities, that try to create some distance. It's similar here. While persuasive and certainly making a case for death with dignity, the film isn't solely a call to arms on a particular issue. Rather, it gives a broad perspective that an audience can model regarding how a movement generates from individuals' shared pain or frustration or fear, and in turn, how that movement can be effective. It's instructional while also being applicable to almost any American social movement, including those that might politically be at odds with death with dignity. That's certainly a huge part of the film's poise. And there's something similar at work with How to Survive a Plague. Completed in 2012 and nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar, the film was directed by a journalist named David France, and it was his first film. I've long thought part of the charm of How to Survive a Plague, part of its effectiveness, comes from the fact that David France didn't know what not to do. Following ACT UP and Treatment Action Group in the 1980s, The film uses archival footage to weave together how a marginalized group bound together because they were literally dying en masse saved their lives. Thanks to the proliferation of camcorders and ACT UP's ability to get news coverage. In fact, the first cut of the film was 13 hours long because there was so much footage. Mind you, that's a 13-hour film distilled down from hundreds of hours of footage. But thanks to all that footage, there were plenty of videos of the organization's meetings and demonstrations that could be reworked into a documentary that serves, as the title says, as a how-to. Supplemented with some interviews, the film is largely set in the participatory mode, I would argue. But I would like to plant the seed that the film's charge comes also from its performative elements. That is how the archival footage and homemade videos of ACT UP and its allies' meetings offer the LGBT community the ability to self-articulate, perhaps in an observational vein for much of it, and how that self-articulation in this moment generates empathy from the viewer that can translate into our sense of how to model behavior after this activism. I would like to stress here, as I don't think I've stressed this enough or ever, that these can be muddy waters. Spectators certainly all have different takes. Please see my viewpoint as strictly that, a point against which you can view the film, engage your own individual takes, and generate what you extract from the film. Beyond that, a quick note that this film is a rare case where there's a novelization, if you will, of the documentary. Not a novel, but a nonfiction work, which was written by David France in 2016 with the same title. Perhaps in another iteration of this course, and if compelled, something you would want to do, is to read the book after the film. Rarely do we engage in a documentary and then read about it, but the process can be illuminating, particularly for seeing what's left off from that original 13-hour cut, what stories translate to print or play better when surreptitiously recorded by activists. What about the news coverage gives the documentary authenticity? When we see the set of Crossfire, how does it feel perhaps more realistic or more performative? I think the combination of the book and the documentary is useful for seeing the tactics that play out effectively, I would argue, in the film. Further, a person can check out another documentary that was made simultaneously called United in Anger about the ACT UP movement, or the French historical narrative film BPM as comparison points. I'll be hitting those prior to the screening Wednesday, so I hope to enlighten you a little bit more about those then. And until then, big thanks again to Kevin and Stacy and to you for listening. I look forward to seeing you Wednesday for How to Survive a Plague.